good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for a few minutes. We have a very, very special guest for this evening. I'm sure you'll really enjoy hearing Kay McClanahan. But before we do that, I just wanted to comment briefly. For those of you who are unaware of the significance of the fact that the fifth of the series of Harry Potter books is to be released on Friday evening at midnight, why at midnight on Friday evening? Well, very, very simply, because that will mark the summer solstice, the occult ceremony when the witches and the goblins and the Satanists and the people dedicated to the dark side celebrate this special time of year. June 21st is, of course, the summer solstice. And you have to realize that so many of the books and the events surrounding the Harry Potter series, which is indoctrinating the children of our nation into witchcraft and the occult and the dark side. So many of these, of course, have occurred at specific satanic times because, of course, the writer, Miss Rowley, was studied witchcraft. She studied mythology. She majored in that in school. But, of course, she has gone deeply into witchcraft. And what a clever, clever way it is, with the help of the media and even many of our churches and our schools, who indoctrinate our children into the anti-God, anti-Christian belief of witchcraft, as long as it's fun. Oh, it's fun, and you can begin to touch into the very, very heart of the evil that surrounds us. And that's really what it's all about, and that's why, of course, the publisher, the author, they understand the significance of Friday at midnight. But the average American does any more than they understand the significance of Earth Day being Lenin's birthday or so many of the important events happening on specific dates. Those people dedicated to the dark side understand the significance of dates. Tragically, the average individual does not. Well, with that behind us, let's get to Kay. And Kay, of course, talks about property rights. And, of course, one of the major thrusts today is to take away people's property rights because, after all, the property belongs to the earth, to Mother Gaia. And that's really what it's all about. The biggest problem in the world is, well, the people. There are too many people. What we need to do is limit property rights and do away with a large part of the population. And if you get into sustainable development and Agenda 21, that's exactly what they're talking about. And you read the Global Biodiversity Report, which came out of the Second Earth Summit held in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, they actually will tell you, of course, private property is not sustainable. The population is not sustainable. The car is not sustainable. A natural gas is not sustainable. Private farming is not sustainable. Water is not sustainable. We're running out of water. But, of course, the key to so much of this is property rights. If we can get the people to give up their property rights, then we can move them into sustainable communities where they can be watched and monitored and forcibly vaccinated. And, well, maybe they'll end up like so many of the people in Africa today, where that population is being systematically just removed. In fact, in Botswana today, 40% of the adult population are HIV infected. And believe me, an awful lot of didn't get it from sexual activity. They got it from the various government programs funded in large part with your tax money. We're killing off Africa. And, of course, remember, what goes around comes around. Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if you aren't willing to stand up and oppose what's going on today, then, of course, your fate is assured. Well, Kay, thank you so much for being with us here at Radio Liberty.
thank you for having me.
Well, now, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your battle there in Greenville? And I want to tell you, this lady is something else. She has had a real impact on the efforts of these wicked people to take away property rights back there in South Carolina. She's on the front line of this battle. Tell our listeners how you got started and then, of course, what's happened.
Well, I'm in Richland County, which is where the capital, Columbia, South Carolina, is. And really, it was kind of it's not a real good story how we found out about it. My husband and I were listening to the radio on the night of Valentine's Day, and they said, come tomorrow night on the 15th of February, this was in 1999, and learn what we have all done, the county council has done for you. And there was this, it was just a tiny little story, teeny tiny little story in the state newspaper, which is our only daily newspaper. And so we decided, well, we better go to that, which it was the next day, and that was the first of three. And we attended each one of these meetings. After the first meeting, we realized what was happening. But what they were saying was, oh, we've devised this way. A bunch of planners have come together and hired consultants. By the way, they were all from out of state. One was from Florida, one was from Philadelphia. And I can't imagine how they would know how to design a planning system for land use in Richland County, South Carolina, because this is nothing like Orlando and it's nothing like Philadelphia. But anyhow, they
let me explain to you how they would know that, because this is all part of a master plan at an international level. Comes right out of Agenda 21, which come right out of the Second Earth Summit. But of course, they don't want the folks down there in Greenville, pardon me, in South Carolina to know what's going on. They want this to think that this is your idea and we're from these agencies and we're the experts and we know what's best for you because we're here to help you, aren't we?
That's what they did, and not only that, they said, we've had all these meetings with the public, which nobody in the public had really known anything about the meetings, but it turned out that there is a radical environmental group here called the Palmetto Conservation Foundation, and they had been in the loop, and they had, in fact, called together their members for a few meetings they call visionings. And at those meetings, it just so happened that they, all the people recommended exactly the same things for Richland County, South Carolina, as every other visioning session for smart growth has, every other person in this country has recommended.
People have to understand, these are terms, visioning, smart growth. I mean, these come right out of the very pit of hell. These are what they're using all over America, but not just all over America, all over the world, to get the people to go along, because after all, we know what's best for you. We're running out of natural resources. We're running out of water. We're running out of natural gas. We're running out of oil. We're running out of everything, and why we're going to have to protect you. And that's why we've got to take away property rights and set up these nature conservatory areas and the wild land areas. And then, of course, get the people into some place where we know that they'll be well taken care of and sustainable. Community.
And controlled.
Right.
And controlled.
Right.
Now, at the time, we knew nothing about Agenda 21, and we knew nothing about the other problems that other citizens were having, other property owners were having all over this country, because our local newspaper did not print anything except, gee, these wonderful consultants have gotten together with all these citizens, and they have recommended that we have all these things. And it just so happened that the things, as I said, were exactly the same recommendations that apparently every other citizen in every other county in every other state had recommended all over the country.
Gee, isn't that a coincidence?
Isn't it a coincidence that
they control so many of the newspapers and control so many of the television and the radio stations? And, I mean, we're just so fortunate to have radio stations like this network we're on tonight, where people can hear the truth, because tragically on most of our networks, and certainly with most of our so-called conservative commentators who argue with our so-called liberal commentators, they never talk about anything really important.
Well, I'm so happy to have found you, and you've mentioned Greenville a couple of times. I'm not in Greenville, but Greenville is in South Carolina, and Greenville is one of the counties that I am so proud of because they have stood up to this. Now, we were blindsided here. We felt like this was a problem the day we heard about it, but there were like two of us. The first meeting that was held of the Richland Landowners Association literally could have been held in an automobile because so very few people really grasped what this thing could do if it was carried to its extreme. And of course, they do intend to carry it to the extreme, and that is where all the people are forced to live in very densely populated areas, and everything outside those areas, they place what they call an urban growth boundary around these areas, and all the property outside those areas is literally uninhabitable. I mean, they call it preservation area, or green space, or whatever they want to call it, but essentially, the government intends to make farmland unavailable to any human being. And in this county, now it's different. There are different ways of accomplishing the same. I feel like it's the same ultimate goal. But here in this county, I really believe that our half of the county, which has been designated as the Congaree Preserve, it's 330 square miles of homes, farms, front yards, every rural property, all rural property. But our 330 square miles has been designated as the Congaree Preserve. I don't think that our land will ultimately end up as Wildlands Project. I think that our land will end up in the hands of a few very wealthy county council members and their buddies. And that includes the environmental group, the Palmetto Conservation Foundation, that has been writing all of our laws.
All right, fine, but it really doesn't matter who it ends up with.
It doesn't.
They're going to take the land away from you, and
you're exactly right.
And the people who live there, and you're in an area where predominantly are there black farms, or these have been in the families for a long, long time. These
since
are good,
slavery.
Hard-working, God-fearing people, and of course they want to keep their property. And this is an elaborate scheme to take it away in the name of nature and conservation and visioning and all of these smart growth. We've got to have smart growth because who'd want some growth?
Willing sellers. That's right. Something you and I have not really talked about before. But the willing seller aspect, they always talk about how after you're down zoned, after your property is zoned to a point where you can't do anything else with it, that you become willing sellers somehow.
Right.
And that your property is then going to be available, of course it will be, to the conservation, they call it the Conservation Commission here. It's any group, they call it the Transfer of Development Rights Board in Charleston County, South Carolina. But any group that is established by the local government to step in and acquire your land or acquire control of your land through something called a conservation easement. But you're only a willing seller because you find once your zoning changes to the point that you can't do anything else with it, you can't pass it on, you can't sell it, you can't subdivide it, and you can't even borrow money on it. And then they call you a willing seller. And that's what people need to listen out for. If they anywhere in this country, if they start talking about sustainable living or smart growth or preservation area or even down zoning or transfer development rights, that's what they're fixing to do.
Now, it used to be, of course, you could, if you had an acre or 5 acres, why you could have put a house on it. But they don't want that. They want to make it so there's just no way you can do anything with your property.
Except allow the government or one of these conservation groups to step in and either take control of it through a conservation easement or take ownership.
Well, of course, there are lots of tricks that they can use. They can do what they did up in the Klamath Valley. They can just take the water away so you can't farm, you can't have cattle, you really can't do much of anything, and your property then becomes worthless, and then they come in and they want to sell it, and that's exactly what they did in the Klamath Valley. And, of course, we all think that the Bush administration is going to give them lots of water now because the good guys are in the White House, but I can assure you that's not really what's going to happen, and I really fear for the people up in that area this coming year or so. And many of them have already been forced to sell, and all part of the based upon faulty, really phony, dishonest environmental reports about the endangerment of a suckerfish, which nobody likes. In fact, it eats all the eggs of the other fish. The Indians hate the suckerfish. In fact, they always only use it for it was for fertilizer. And then, of course, this whole thing about the salmon, and that is all contrived as well. If we had the time, we'd go into the background of that. And we know that in many places, and I'm not saying necessarily in the Klamath River, but elsewhere up there, why they've got people from Fish and Wildlife out there clubbing salmon and electrocuting them, then they can point and say, look at the shortage of fish. Gee, we've got to have more control over these areas. And, of course, this is what they're doing, and it's all a lie, but you're not going to hear this on radio or television most places, because they want your property, they want your future, they want your freedom.
And they want your children not to inherit your property. There's a local, another local environmental group called the Congaree Land Trust in Richland County, and in the what they call the Midlands, which is the center of the state. It's several counties. But Congaree Land Trust, in a recent newspaper article, in their own paper, their own little magazine, they said that the statistics show that all the farmers in the southeast, that a majority of the farmers, I beg your pardon, in the southeast are in their 70s, and therefore their land is in jeopardy. Now, what they mean in English is that they want to get control of this property or get ownership of it before the farmer dies and leaves it to his heirs. But in jeopardy, that's what your land and my land is if you are approaching your twilight years and you happen to own a farm in the southeast. To this group, your property is in jeopardy because it's not in their hands yet. They need to get it in their hands before you die.
Now, of course, were you able to get the support of your neighbors to get them to understand what this was really all about?
Yes, sir. What we did here, as I said, well, as you said, the one of the really unique things about Richland County, South Carolina, and particularly Lower Richland, which is, as I said, half the county, is that we are told that this is the largest contiguous landmass on the eastern coast that is predominantly owned by African Americans. Now, I am not an African American, but many of my neighbors are, and many of them inherited their property literally from freed slaves through the generations, and they have no intention of selling that land. In fact, I believe that they've been targeted for two reasons. One is that many of us, myself and my African-American neighbors, are land rich and money poor, so we're easy targets. But the other thing is that we have no intention of selling the property. They're saying that they need to do all these things. They need to place all these restrictions on us because we're going to just pave over all of the farmlands. But I challenge anyone to come here and just ride around. There's no land for sale. And I really believe that, as I said, the main thrust of the effort here is to transfer hands, to get the land into hands of other individuals who wish to develop it.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Kay, how they create this specter. You don't want your area like Los Angeles, just nothing but freeways, and of course they pave they paint this picture of all the farmland being paved over, and no place, of course, to grow the food, or no place for the birds, and of course this is all a lie. They do all of these things, and they talk about these things so that they can get these legislation passed to take away your rights and your freedom. And until you understand that these people, of course, are the ultimate in fascists, they want to establish a feudalistic society under a ruling elite. They're financed by people of great wealth who want, of course, to control your property through the aegis of government or take it away and have it themselves. We'll be back here in just a few moments here at Radio Liberty with Kay McClanahan talking about what's going on back there in the Carolinas. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Kay McClanahan. We're talking about, of course, what's going on back there in South Carolina. And of course, Kay is leading the effort in her area, and I actually was called by a friend of mine in Greenville, and he said, you've got to get hold of a Kay. In fact, you know who this was. It was a dentist from Greenville. He was so impressed by you and your husband and the work you'd done. So basically, the people now rallying behind you and trying to get these carpetbaggers out of your county?
Yes, sir. Here in this county, the Richland Landowners Association was our original effort, and we still have the Richland Landowners Association. And the people here have really rallied, particularly the rural property owners, although I must say that this, our smart growth plan is going to hurt the people in the areas that are designated for all the future growth. They're going to be hurt just as much because they don't want people crammed in on top of them, and they don't want businesses and commercial endeavors and industry piled in on top of their homes, but that's what it says they're going to have. But it, also, we have founded a group called the South Carolina Property Rights Watch, which is statewide, and that's how I happened to meet your dear friend from Greenville, and I appreciate him telling you about us. We've worked together. He and I and our group have worked together. In fact, he's come down here for meetings, and they in Greenville have been so successful. Not only have they thwarted this smart growth effort once, but they've done it again. 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the Greenville County was targeted for the same kind of comprehensive land use plan that they have since passed in Richland County. But they headed it off, and their council members were very alert and very aggressively conservative, and they said no. In fact, they passed it, as our council did, they passed it thinking that it was something wonderful for the environment, because that's what we're all told. You know, if you don't do this, you must be anti-environment. And they passed it, and 10 days later, they unpassed it in Greenville County 3 years ago. And then recently, of course, they've been targeted again. These guys never give up.
They never do, never. Do they? Because, of course, they're well-financed. They got a lot of money behind
Absolutely.
Them. And, of course, all of this comes right out of this international group of Gorbachev and, of course, Stephen Rockefeller and Maurice Strong, a couple of billionaires and the former head of the KGB. And they all have exactly the same goal, because all of them are motivated by the occult. That's what people really miss in this whole thing. All of them are interested in a situation where everything, every aspect of our lives is controlled and regulated and regimented.
Well, I'll tell you something, Dr. Monteith. I believe in God as I know you do, and I just don't think that this can go on forever and ever. Now, the people need to stand up for themselves, but the good Lord is watching what all these people are doing to us, and now we're finding each other. There's nothing like the sensation that I felt when I realized that there are others out there, because we were kept absolutely in the dark by our local media. We had no idea. We thought this was some radical thing that our county council had dreamed up all on their own, and lo and behold, we discovered that it's happening all over this country.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, but you're absolutely right. This is not only a national, but an international effort. How could that be, and we don't know about it? Well, somebody's... Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest tonight is Kay McClanahan. And incidentally, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Kay is talking about this plan that they're trying to put in into her county, but of course this is the same plan they're trying to put in every county in the country and every country in the world. Believe me, they know exactly what they're doing. Of course, in the dictatorships, they can just put it in. There's no opposition. But here, of course, they have to convince the people that they're here to help. And so they bring in the carpetbaggers, all well-paid. They will have public meetings. And did they ever put a meeting on there with you, with a facilititator, who wanted to get a consensus on what should be done?
Well, absolutely. We had facilitators, but they never wanted to know what we wanted. They, the facilitator's job was to apparently write words on a piece of paper that we made, when we made recommendations, they would write things up on this piece of paper, I'm told. Now, I was not privy to these meetings. I was not invited, but even a very few of those people who were invited by the Palmetto Conservation Foundation were alert enough to realize that when they made recommendations, they wrote these words up here on this piece of paper, and later those words turned into exactly what the same smart growth agenda is in every other state and every other county across this country.
Isn't that remarkable?
Isn't that remarkable? But they would say things like, do you want connectivity? You know, and they would, somebody might say, yes, I want connectivity. So they write the word connectivity. Well, later on, that was translated to mean that they want green space connecting all of this wild land or whatever they want to call it in each area. Here they call it preservation area. That's not connectivity. These people were talking about a sidewalk between the school and the church.
No, they the thing is that they this is a standard technique. Now, they don't ask the people to vote on any of this. This is all by consensus. And, of course, they decided before the meeting was ever put on exactly what the conclusion was going to be.
Certainly.
But they have to give the impression, oh, the word democratic, and we represent the desires of the people. No, they represent the desires of the elite, all part of a massive scheme. If you haven't seen my sustainable development syllabus, I've gotten our four tape sets on sustainable development or our videos on sustainable development. You need to get that information. You need to see how it fits together. We carry a wonderful book by Dr. Michael Kaufman that goes into the background of this whole global movement, because it all has to do with globalism. Everything going on ties together, doing away with the borders, sending our industries overseas, the destruction of the wealth of the American people. And, of course, they figure once we're impoverished, why we're not going to be able to resist their efforts and their very clever schemes. And, of course, when we have no money at all, the taxes keep going up, why people will be forced to sell. And, of course, they're there always to help us. Go ahead, Kay.
Well, and one more thing. Once your land is denied the potential, the word downzoning, I'm not sure that everybody's familiar with what that means, because it's their word, but it appears in our comprehensive land use plan. But essentially, downzoning is zoning to a point that is heretofore there is no definition.
All right,
undefined.
It used to be, of course, something would be a commercial, or it would be industrial, or it would be farmland. But, of course, when you downsize it, of course, it used to be maybe 5 acres for a house. And, you know, you could put a house on an acre, or you could put a house on 5 acres. You downsize it, you could put a house on 5,000 acres.
That's right. It's downzoning means literally zoning to a point that is heretofore undefined.
Right.
Therefore, once you zone people to a point where it is below minimum standard of zoning, below minimum standard for any sort of investment potential, because all land is investment. I can't help it if people intend to keep it forever. It's still investment. It's just like having money when you have your land. And once they downzone it, you can't even borrow money on it. So at that point in time, you have no other options. You must do whatever, if you ever need money, you're going to have to do whatever that government or that conservation group allows you to do.
How can they keep you from borrowing money on your property?
Well, the banks won't loan you money on the property that is zoned to a point where it has no investment potential whatsoever. You cannot get a bank. Ask any bank.
All right. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here, and when we get back, of course, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Kay McClanahan. Kay, do you have any sort of a website or any means by which people could get in touch with you if they'd like to?
Yes, sir. Our website is propertyrightswatch.org. And we also have a telephone number, 803-353-2001. That's here in Columbia, South Carolina.
That's 803-353-2001.
Yes, sir. I welcome anyone's call.
All right,
propertyrightswatch.org. And I do apologize because it's still in the construction stage, and we're a little behind. Right now they're trying to pass a humongous zoning ordinance. They're calling it a zoning ordinance. It's essentially 300 pages, and it's going to change our lives, every aspect of our lives in Richland County.
Well, are the people there on the council, pardon me, on these county councils, are the people there in the planning commission for or against this?
Well, in our county, they voted 11-0 for the plan. The plan's already passed, but the zoning ordinance, I can't tell you how this is going to turn out. The planning commission was not allowed to create this ordinance. As I said, it's not just, they call it a zoning ordinance, but it's really a unified development ordinance, and it is essentially going to change everything about our lives in Richland County, including how many garage sales we can have in our own home every year. You can only have two. If this thing passes, you're restricted to two garage sales in your own home per year. You can only have a 4-foot fence in your front yard, no matter how big your dog is. You must have an area, a 50-foot area on the road that's controlled by the county, even though you own it, and you must landscape it with the trees that they tell you, the size, the kind of trees that they tell you, and the number of trees that have to be, they tell you what you must place in there. These things may sound trivial. You must have an 8-by-12-foot porch on your front, on the front of your house, any new home in Richland County, South Carolina. But believe me, you must pick up your dog's excrement if you take a walk, no matter how rural you are in Richland County, South Carolina. These things all together, along with 300 other pages of things, is going to completely control the lives of the people of Richland County.
And that's what it's really all about. Well, are the people understanding this? Are you able to reach the people there? Can you get them to listen to our programs on the Internet or in shortwave? People have to begin to understand what's going on, and they're certainly not going to get it from the controlled media.
No, sir. And yes, sir. They're not going to get it from the other media. And yes, we are doing everything we can, and yes, we are making some headway, but I must tell you that if it were not for people like yourself and others, we've been on Fox National Television. We've been in Insight Magazine, insightmag.org. If anybody wants to go see, they need to read September 16th archives. I think it's called Smart Growth Riles Black Farmers. We've been in Investors Business Daily, but we have not been in the local newspaper. And that's what troubles me. It's hard to get the word out when you can't get your own people in Columbia, South Carolina to talk about it, but the media people. But the people themselves are beginning to wonder what in the world is going on, even if they haven't followed this thing to the point to find out if we're right or wrong. It's been 4 years now. We've been fighting for 4 solid years. And at the end of 4 years, everything that we said was going to happen 4 years ago is now happening. So a lot of the people that were either told, you know, they were told. They were told we were crazy. They were told we were liars. They were told we were stupid. They were told we were ignorant. And all of these things are now happening that we told them 4 years ago was coming. So I have to say that if nothing else, just the bad news is making a lot of believers out of people who really didn't either take the time to try to understand this thing or didn't believe that it could happen in America. And
all
that's
right.
one
Oh, let's go to Jeannie. And Jeannie's, of course, one of our local activists here, and she's on the front line of the battle here in our county, in Santa Cruz County, against exactly the same forces. Hi, Jeannie. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing just fine.
Does some of this sound familiar to you?
Oh, yes. Like 5 years ago, they told me that they laughed at me and mocked me, and I knew I had the truth, and I knew I had the facts. And never give up. Keep on talking. And it's nice to hear a woman up in the front lines also.
Well, Jeannie, thank you for calling in and telling me that, because it really is important to me. The people of California have been some of the carpetbaggers that you were talking about, Dr. Monteith. There's a group called the American Farmland Trust.
Oh, yeah.
And they sent a man named Ralph Grossi from Marin County, California, to South Carolina. In fact, his goal was to set up an office here.
Right.
And we literally kept them from settling in South Carolina. I think they did set an office up in North Carolina. But his only his only message was to tell the people here that they needed to do away with farm subsidies for our farmers, so that the money would be available for these conservation subsidies to grab up land.
Well, that's what happens is these people in positions, such as in the Chamber of Commerce, they go from city to city and from state to state. We just had one coming in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, came into Santa Cruz County, and now he's moved on to Tracy, California, president, CEO of the Chamber of Commerce. And so they are carpetbaggers, and they go from city to city and state to state. I might tell you what's happening here locally in Santa Cruz County, California. There is a small town called Aptos. And we, in the county, what we have is a historical commission. In other words, the state wants to come in and create a historical district. And I was reading the newspaper, and it says, well, we're going to get money from the Federal Park Service. And I thought, why are we getting money from the feds? And if you track the Convention on World Heritage, which is the United Nations Treaty in the United States, it is administered by the Department of Interior's National Park Service. So what's happening, as soon as you name a district of a city a historical district, then that comes under the management of the federal government, which is the Park Service, which is tied in with the United Nations Convention on World Heritage.
And of course, then this, they tell our local planning commission what to do, and since if they don't carry out the federal edicts, they don't get the money.
Well, that's true. We just had a program in Aptos Village, and our supervisor, Ellen Peary, was there, and boy, was she pushing it. And so our supervisor understands fully, as I have explained to them in front of the Board of Supervisors, about Agenda 21 and Measure C and how it ties in with the international treaties. So we actually have five on the supervisors panel, and they all are socialists. And what's happening is the city manager, the county manager, or the lawyers are telling them what to do and what is legal so they will not get sued. And so they really don't have any power, the supervisors and the commissioners now. They're just being told what to do.
By these national groups, I assume?
Right.
Okay, fine. Anything else you want to say, Jeannie?
No, but I was going to ask this nice lady, what is her name again?
Kay McClanahan.
Kay, have you heard about these historical districts and how they want to have buildings that retain a old look, a historical look? Have you heard about that?
Well, the group here that was established, the commission called the Conservation Commission, was established by our county council. At the same time, they passed our comprehensive land use plan to essentially pick out the properties that they want. And they have, this is their word, not mine, partners. One of the partners is the conservation group, the Palmetto Conservation Foundation, that was paid $100,000 to essentially do the land use study and make sure that the people came together and asked for what they wanted them to ask for. But the other group is the Historic Columbia Foundation. And
uh-oh,
I'm finding I love to hear from other people across this country, and I hope other people will call me, even if you call later. But this historical districts, they're trying to establish historical districts here and there in the county, and one of the partners, as I said, with the Conservation Commission is the Historic Columbia Foundation. I have learned, not what you have just told me about, but I have learned about historical districts in other states, and people have actually been restricted from painting the inside of their homes. If they find themselves in a historical district, they are suddenly under the control of government, not only for what they can do with the exterior of their home, but what they can do with the interior of their home.
And, of course, this is all part of this fascist scheme, and the people don't even understand what it's all about until suddenly they find that they're lawbreakers. And, of course, facing fines and imprisonment, you know, for, well, a thing like selling shares of stock, my goodness, we're going to come after you. And, of course, they have the system set up in such a way that there will be no opposition to them. They have all the campaign laws of when you run for political office, no matter what you do, you're going to violate a law someplace, because they don't want any opposition. They want to use the political system to further their goals. And if you're, of course, on their side, why, you're never bothered if you break the campaign rules. If you're on the other side, they're going to come after you with the federal laws and put you away for 30 years, like they're threatening to put Martha Stewart away for 30 years because of her terrible crime. And maybe she did know and maybe she didn't know. But if somebody told you that somebody was selling their stock, wouldn't you probably say, well, gee, if the owners are selling their stock, maybe I ought to do that as well? And, of course, but anyway, be that as it may, we're in real trouble. And thanks so much for calling, Jeannie. Anything else you want to say?
I have your number, and I'll call you tomorrow, and we can talk.
Okay,
great. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, bye.
Thanks so much, Jeannie. And, of course, we have here in the Santa Cruz area several people. We have Jeannie. Jeannie has been to international water meetings. She was back at the Millennium Summit there in New York with Gorbachev and all of these people back in the year 2000. We have Joan Paris, who, of course, attended international meetings all over the world. And so we have all the information. We have all of these reports here at Radio Liberty. And if you want to get our material, remember our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, the Millennium Summit syllabus, the Sustainable Development syllabus. I give you tremendous insight into what's going on in the course of videos, and four tape sets go with that. And you may being sit there, well, of course, that's too bad of what's happening to those people in South Carolina, too bad what's happening to people in California, but it's not going to happen to me. And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, it's going to happen to everyone, because this is an international program. These people have unlimited funds, and they, of course, don't give up, do they, Kay?
No, they don't ever give up. And the one thing that I have found that have saved us for 4 years, I can't say that it's going to save us forever, but our zoning laws were supposed to be in place that were going to fully finish us off, restrict us to the point where we couldn't do anything except what the government tells us to do. But they were supposed to be in place 4 years ago. And the only way that we have survived this 4 years is by absolutely not making any deals. You cannot negotiate with these people, because once they get a little bit, even if you meet them what you consider halfway, they just wait a while and come back and get the other half. There's no way to negotiate with them. People have to realize up front you're fighting for your lives and your future and the future of your heirs, and you can't make deals.
And not only that, but these people lie. And these people are part of a nationwide movement. They know what is going on. They just don't want you to do it. And they do target blacks and Hispanics. We see this down in Miami where they're targeting the areas. They figure Hispanics won't be able to resist them. And they've seized a lot of their land down south of Miami.
In Darby, Ohio?
Right.
The Amish? They targeted the Amish in Darby, Ohio?
Right.
For the thousands and thousands of acres of beautiful farmland on the Ohio River.
Did they get that or not?
They didn't get it, but a lot of us got together. Now, I didn't go there, but I had just begun, and we had just begun to realize that there were things going on in other parts of this country when they had the Friends of the Darby hosted a national gathering. I wouldn't call it a conference, but when everybody came up there to try to help out, and they won. Now, I don't know, they offered them $1 million for their land, and people read that in the paper and say, golly, well, they should have taken that. It was like $30 an acre. That's how much land there was of beautiful, not wetland, beautiful farmland down
And they offered them $30 an acre for it?
$30 an acre was what the $1 million would have bought from Amish of their farmland.
Well, I'm sure glad that people did rally behind them, but you have to understand that if we don't stand together, if we don't hang together, we're going to hang separately. I think that was what they said that when they were forming America. And, of course, you have to understand the other side has unlimited funds. It's got people like Ted Turner, a multi-billionaire. He's the largest landowner in this country, and he finances the environmental movement so that they'll control your land. But, of course, he doesn't want his land controlled.
No, but the Nature Conservancy, if people will go into the Washington Post, there's like 15 recent stories about the Nature Conservancy, which is the largest conservancy group in the country. In fact, they control 90 million acres all over the world, 12 million acres in the United States of America, which is the size of Switzerland and the United States, and they're essentially the government's real estate company. Now, Nature Conservancy has just been, as I said, this expose in the Washington Post, and I understand that the Congress is now going to investigate Nature Conservancy, much like Enron, because they are essentially using conservation as a way to get very, very rich and very, very powerful. And that's what we have to the common citizen, has to stand up to. But that, in conjunction with the government and government handouts, they're giving the Nature Conservancy in South Carolina is going to receive up to $50 million a year, and I don't mean from zero to 50. I mean it's going to be somewhere between $32 and $50 million a year starting next year for 10 years. That's $500 million that they're going to give the Nature Conservancy and these other environmental groups to grab up our property, and they're going to use our money to do it with. Now, that's a law that passed in South Carolina, and we are going to have to undo this. We fought it. We almost beat it, but the lobbyists, you wouldn't believe the money that was there and the groups that were lobbied to come in and receive this Conservation Bank money. It's called Conservation Bank Act. We fought it for 2 years, and we finally lost.
Well, of course, the thing is that they simply buy the votes. Now, that should be dishonest, but of course, it's only, of course, if it's a conservative that's given money to get something passed. If it's a liberal that's given something passed, why, that's perfectly all right. And they're very, very selective in who they prosecute. I don't think that any of our officials should take any money from a lobbyist or any money from a corporation. We should simply outlaw that, and yet, of course, you and I are restricted in what we can give, and they can always find means of giving it to a committee that's going to support the candidacy, or maybe it's just a little help, or maybe when, of course, you've done a service, when you get out of the legislature, you'll get a comfortable job, or you'll get a corporate job, you'll become Certainly. Well, of course, like Dick Cheney, as you remember, he was the Secretary of Defense, and then, of course, he immediately leaves Secretary of Defense. He's never held a corporate job. He's immediately, of course, the CEO of Halliburton. Halliburton, an international corporation. In fact, this is about 1992, I think he comes in, leaves the position of Secretary of Defense. And immediately Halliburton, of course, is working for Saddam Hussein, helping repair some things after the Gulf War. And then, of course, he's with them for 8 years, makes, I don't know, mucho millions of dollars. He's still getting what they call a deferred salary of $160,000 a year while he is still the Vice President of the United States. He's getting his deferred salary from Halliburton. I don't know what a deferred salary is. I think that's simply return for services given. And isn't it interesting now that Halliburton was given a $600 million contract to rebuild Iraq even before the war ended, and they didn't know what was going to be involved for that $600 million? That's the way the game is played. And that's why, of course, this funding, the ability to bribe our elected representatives by lobbyists is wrong. And if we could only take the power away from government, we wouldn't have to worry about that.
And, I used to think that it's the Democrats versus the Republicans, but now this new problem that we're facing is sort of the rich versus the unrich.
No, it's called, I call
it's
it...
not the rich versus the poor, it's just the rich versus the unrich.
Well, it's really, we've got two political parties, and they're both going exactly the same direction. And we really have one political party with two branches. One's a Republican, the other's a Democrat. They're both dedicated to globalism, they're both dedicated to control, they're both dedicated to ever-increased power over the lives of the people. They're both dedicated to environmentalism and taking away our property rights, taking away our gun rights. They're both dedicated to helping communist China all that they can. They're both dedicated to the fast track, which is going to, of course, result in the total destruction of the industrial basis of the United States. So it really doesn't matter whether Republicans or Democrats in the White House. They may talk different, but look and see who are the biggest spender, the biggest deficits we've ever had in the history of our nation, even bigger than the deficits we had during the Second World War. By the current administration. And they're saying, well, it's only about $400 billion, but they're totally ignoring the $300 billion they're stealing from Social Security and Medicare. So we're going to have well over $500 billion deficit this year alone. And that is fiscally responsible Republicanism. I believe in everything the Republicans say. I don't believe in anything that they do, at least not at the national level.
Well, I do hope, and I will say this over and over, I think that we have right now in this country and in this county and in this state and your state and every other state, we have enough elected officials who still are conscientious, moral people if they will just study what is happening. There are enough to stop this. There are enough to turn it around and make America the safe, a democratic society, the republic that was established here by our forefathers, and there are enough to enforce the Constitution of the United States of America, but it's going to be up to the people because the media is never going to let them know what is really happening. It's going to be up to us to make sure that they understand that if they vote a certain way, it's not going to be because of the environment. It's going to be because somebody is trying to take control of the lives of the American citizens.
Absolutely. In fact, let me just suggest that if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to know what you can do. Why you need to set up an Institute of the Constitution in your community, and if you can do that to teach people about our heritage, about the Constitution, about how our freedom is being eroded, call 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. 9068. Now, for our listeners up there in the Great Northwest, they've started an Institute of the Constitution this last Tuesday. It's going to be held just on the border between between Washington and Idaho. And if you'd like to know where that meeting is, it'll be Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock. You can call our 800 number, and we'll get the reference to you so you'll know how to get in touch with the people. And go to an Institute of the Constitution, learn to see how it's done, and then set one up yourself. If you'd like to know anything more, give us a call at 800. That's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we're just about out of time here, but I agree with Kay. We have to educate the people, and we have to make the people realize that their families, their future, their freedom are under attack today. Kay, do you have a parting thought for our listeners tonight?
Well, I just want to thank you again. You are the reason that people are beginning to find out what's going on, and I want to make sure that everybody understands that anytime you hear the word sustainable living or even conservation, I hate to say it, but conservation used to be a nice word. Now it's being used against the people. A preservation area, smart growth, these are all terms that belong to the bad guys. Smart growth sounds such a good idea, you know. Nobody wants dumb growth, but the truth is, smart growth means no growth, and people have become secondary. Our land is at risk, and I want everybody to come together. I want people to contact us. We're at the Richland Landowners Association in Eastover, South Carolina. Our address is Post Office Box 38, Eastover, E-A-S-T-O-V-E-R, South Carolina, 29044. And we can use any kind of help, too, any kind of financial assistance. We're all volunteers, absolutely. There's not a single salaried person in our group, and we don't have any money because we're just barely hanging on and staying ahead of this freight train that's rolling down the track. But everybody else needs to realize, if you hear these words, if you hear sustainable living, you need to understand. Don't wait. You need to get your groups together and meet and do like they did in Greenville County, South Carolina, and meet these people head on. They had 300 people at their first visioning session. Those people weren't invited. They just showed up, and they said, no, we're not going to do this, and go home. Go back where you came from. We don't need anybody from outside to tell us how we need to live or grow. And that's what it's going to take.
All right, fine. Well, Kay, God bless you. Thank you for everything you do. And we'll be talking to you again. And just you hang in there and do everything you can to get people educated. And you might mention RadioLiberty.com. They can listen to us 5 hours a day and get a little education.
Sure.
God bless you. Thanks so much.
God bless you, and thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, certainly Kay McClanahan's just a wonderful woman, and she's dedicated herself to this battle. What are you doing to preserve your freedom? Well, this is what Radio Liberty is all about, is to bring you the information you're not going to get from the controlled media. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to get our newsletter, give us a call. We'll send you a free copy. I hope you want to get it on a regular basis, but give us a call and ask, I think, maybe for the March newsletter, or you can ask for anyone you want to. We'll be glad to send you one newsletter, and simply give us a call and ask for a free newsletter, and we'll send you a catalog. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Get educated, and then help us educate others, because freedom once lost will never be regained. And so until say goodbye to our listeners up there in the great Northwest, ask them to pray for America, to pray for our leaders, to pray for our ministers, because they should be leading this spiritual battle, because we are fighting a spiritual battle on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. We'll be right back. Well, good evening, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line right now Mr. Roger P. Smith. We're talking about his book, The Other Face of Public Television, Censoring the American Dream. Mr. Smith, are you there?
I'm here, Dr. Stan.
Thank you so very much for being with us. And certainly a fascinating, fascinating book. And, of course, you've been involved in writing scripts and for plays and television for a long time, haven't you?
Oh, I've been 30 or 40 years.
All right, fine. And, of course, you've had a lot of experience with public television. So why don't you sort of give us the background? You know, most people don't understand where public television came from, why it's here. You know, it sounds like it's a great idea. We want to have educational television. We want to improve the culture. We want to improve, the opportunity of people to see worthwhile things. So what happened and where did it all go wrong?
What happened was that the FCC decided that there would be commercial television. And the chairman of the FCC in about the mid-1950s said, commercial television is a vast wasteland. He thought the programs were terrible and they weren't doing anything for anybody, and that something ought to be done. So some people around in the Ford Foundation said, well, why don't we try to develop another alternative television medium that will have different things on it from the things that are on this vast wasteland. And the question was, how are we going to do it? Technology was much more limited than it is now. It was only black and white live television. And they wanted to be able to do something a little bit different and a little bit better.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I'm always suspicious with anything that the Ford Foundation has anything to do with. I mean, it sounds really very, very good, but having studied the history of the Ford Foundation, it certainly has not necessarily benefited the American people as such. So they wanted to come up with something better. Of course, what is that old saying, the enemy of good good is better? What did they come up with, and what's wrong with the PBS that we have now, the public broadcasting system?
So the first thing they came up with was a television series on Sunday afternoon on the commercial networks, on CBS, I believe it was, which was unsold time. And they put Alastair Cook and Leonard Bernstein and people on television to talk about things that you couldn't hear about or see about or know about on commercial television. And these were programs where, when I was a young person, I and all my friends wanted to watch, because I wanted to know about things like Bach. and they developed communication into theater. And everybody thought this was wonderful and that there should be something like this permanently in American television. So the Ford Foundation continued to support what they called educational television. And one year they appropriated the vast sum of $10 million to try to see if there could be television that was not commercial television, was not simply entertainment and silliness to go to everybody. It was very difficult for them. And they said, well, why don't we do teaching? So they went to, they developed a station in Ann Arbor, Michigan, that would develop teaching television. Then tape was invented. And with that meant that you could have teaching television and you could send these tapes from one place to another. That made it possible for us to have a network of something that was different from commercial television. Now, if you look at television, commercial television today, a lot of people watch it, and a lot of people don't. And so I think the Ford Foundation was right because they thought there should be an alternative to mass television. So there was this thing that they developed, and they tried to find some support for it, and it was just terribly expensive. We had a nation, and we had all these cities, and everyone had to have its own television station, and they couldn't figure out how they were going to support it. So Lyndon Johnson said, there really ought to be something like this. If we're going to build a great society, we can't build it just out of commercial television. There ought to be some kind of support for other people who have something other to say than people who are selling products. And so he was able to persuade the Congress to bring out the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967, which said there is going to be federal support for non-commercial television.
And, of course, isn't that really wonderful? The only trouble is that when the federal government subsidizes it, the federal government is going eventually to support it, and you're going to have simply an extension of government propaganda into the minds and the living rooms of the American people.
Somehow, Dr. Stern, they didn't know that was going to happen.
I wonder, it's sort of like that Medicare was originally only going to cost $9 billion by the year 1990. Medicare was a wonderful idea when it was put forward by Lyndon Johnson. The trouble was that by 1990, it was costing about $53 billion or $56 billion. They just had no idea that how that would happen.
And I think... when I went to school, I was one of these happy people who read the literature of the centuries before us. And the literature of the centuries before us says there are always people who are going to be stealing, who are going to be lying, who are going to be conniving. Wherever you go to get what they want, and what we have to do if we're going to build a civilized society is to recognize that and to be able to deal with it effectively. And I think that what happened with public television was we were in an era that was benefiting from the overflow from the Victorian era, which was an era in which there were more law-abiding people in Victorian England than there had ever been before. And somehow in America we thought, okay, we were going to have a society in which people were going to do the right thing. I mean, this is America. And America exists for people to do the right thing, to be honest and true and, I thought, creative. And we really believed that. And maybe we were romantics. We were, because we were wrong. And Lyndon Johnson set up a situation whereby people could have the opportunity in what was called a non-governmental corporation, had nothing to do with the government, non-governmental corporation that was going to produce television programs for the people.
I love your statement here. History tells us that kings approve of monarchy and authoritarians of dictatorship. That history is the propaganda of the victim. Democracy was supposed to end that freedom of thought was supposed to be allowed, or democracy was supposed to end that freedom of thought was supposed to be allowed. And of course, it's a wonderful idea, but the reality is that's not what's happened.
But only in the last 50 years, prior to the 50 years ago, I think it was happening.
Yes, but of course, this is a much different world than it was 50 years ago, because the moral foundation, a society can't exist without a moral foundation, and the moral foundation of this nation has been eroded and destroyed, and our educational system is no longer used to teach children about idealism and morality and honesty. Our educational system, some of the books that are used there give our kids a feeling of hopelessness. Life is tough and then you die. And of course, life is really simply a matter of quiet desperation. That's what so many young people come out of school with today. And little wonder, of course, they then turn to materialism as a means of trying to satisfy that desire, that aspiration that all of us have for something better or different.
How did this happen?
Well, you tell us how it happened. my listeners know, of course, how I feel. Would like to get, of course, your view on how it happened, because you've written a whole book on, and the title is The Other Face of Public TV, mm-hmm. Censoring the American Dream, and I really believe that's true. I believe the American Dream is still there, but, of course, nobody ever understands what that dream is, because television is such an effective means of manipulating our reality and controlling what we believe and our aspirations. And of course, you know, as you point out, that what's wrong with commercial television is that the advertisements make us want and desire. And I watch that television. I watch those ads. And, you know, I can't decide whether I want a Cadillac or a Hummer or one of the new Dodge pickups, you know. And yet I don't need a car, and I'm not going to buy one. But I will have to admit, as I sit there and I watch those television commercials, I want one of those.
And the last thing you want to think of is Gautama Buddha, who, what was it, in 300 B.C. said, the significant life, you live it with the extinction of desire.
Right, of course, but everything is aimed at making us desirous. We want to have that body like that fellow has there in the screen who's using that wonderful exercise system. We want to be thin like that attractive model. We want to be rich like the people on The Millionaire, Joe Millionaire. And, of course, we certainly want all those things that we see advertised every day.
I think you and I agree that consumerism is going to be a destructive force.
It certainly is.
Society.
And, of course, but the thing is, of course, idealism is a wonderful commodity. Idealism is what makes life worthwhile.
Right.
But, of course, we've lost the vision of that, you know, in our survivor games. I mean, who can play the most dirty tricks and get the other people out so that they can win the $1 million jackpot?
I don't know what it was like in the 19th century, but at least, or the 18th century, but then there was, what was Beethoven fighting against? He did it anyway. And I still think that through whatever the society is going for, there are always people who say, look, I have a vision and a dream of something better, and damn it, I'm going to do it.
But of course, if you can't get before the people, if you can't, you know, express your idea, if you can't infuse other people with idealism, then of course there is no idealism. And today I find so little idealism among our youth. The average person, they simply want to be subservient and go along and get along. And of course, a lot of people just want to get their nice job with the corporation and stay there till they die or till they retire and then live out their twilight years with affluence. I don't think it's going to happen, but this is the objective of so many people.
I couldn't agree with you more, Dr. Sam. But I think where it happens is, it happens because somebody put them down in front of the TV set when they were babies.
And of course, on your front page of your...
The TV set says, here's what you can have that will make life good for you.
The front page.
It's 24 hours a day.
Of course, the front page of your book actually shows this child sitting in front of the television set, of course, doing exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and some of them are going to believe it, and it's a lie.
Well, now, of course, what happened to public television? Why isn't it no longer give us this idea to stimulate creativity and idealism?
Well, I think the problem, Dr. Stan, was with the way the federal government funded it, because the federal government had other interests. Here was this non-governmental corporation that funded non-commercial television, and every year they'd come to the federal government and say, say, here's what we'd like to do. And then somebody in the Senate or the House would say, well, my wife doesn't like this show, or my wife doesn't like that show. And the people in public television would say, well, you know, if you don't like my shows, then I'm not going to get paid next year, and we're not going to get the grant. So we'll try to do shows that you do like and that your wife likes. And so they began to make shows for the congressmen and the wives of the congressmen. So they'd get the grants. So they'd get the, they got $380 million a year or something like that from the Congress for a jobs program for people who don't do very much. And it, that's the way it worked, and it worked that way simply because people are the way people are and always have been. They are always going to be venal. They are always going to think about their own advantage, even if they are supposed to be engaged in the public benefit. Right. That's a very cynical view and a very, I think, disappointing view of what is happening to American life.
What was that remark of Groucho Marx that you had? The key to success is integrity. If you can fake that, you've got it made.
Yeah.
The key to success is integrity. If you can fake that, you've got it made. I thought that was a beautiful line. Well, I'm sure your book is enjoyable to read because I find much there that I tend to agree with. And I share your frustration, as I think that so many of our listeners do, that we would like to think there would be some place that we could get the both sides of the issues discussed and discussed fairly and, of course, openly. But, of course, we certainly don't find that on the commercial television. I mean, we I don't usually watch television. I can't stand it. But I was back in the East recently, and so I spent a couple of hours watching Fox and watching other networks. And they'll have these argument programs. So they'll have these people yelling at one another. They're in different areas, and each one's trying to talk over the other one so that they can't get their ideas out. And the host allows this thing to go on, and you end up having nothing but an emotional response, but no real factual information put forward that can enter into an intelligent discourse on what is right and what is wrong.
That's part of the strategy.
Right, absolutely. But, of course, you would hope that public television, serving the interests of the public, would give that opportunity to hear views of all points of view expressed and expressed well. But we certainly don't hear it there either. In fact, many people feel that it's even worse than some of the than Fox or some of the other networks.
You remind me of this terrible thing that that's happened in America. I think it's sort of since President Nixon, that when you look at any media, when I look at the internet and I look at the news of the day, every day there's the President of the United States. He is at the top of the news. Is he the only man in America who does anything, who knows anything, who accomplishes anything? You would get that impression.
You certainly do. In fact,
and I think that is wrong.
But, of course, so much of this is simply a propaganda, and I think that people have to understand that television is such an efficient means of propaganda. And, you know, of course, a smiling individual, a press conference, I was so embarrassed at the last press conference just before we went to battle in Iraq because the president, everything was scripted. And, of course, when it came to asking questions from the various reporters in the front row or the front two rows, he would look down at the podium and he'd say, oh, yes, Bob, you're the first one. Let's get your question. And Bob would stand up and he would have a question, but it would always be written out. There was nothing spontaneous. The president would look down, read the script, and then when he'd read what he was supposed to respond to Bob, then he'd say, now I think, Peter, you're the next one. And then he'd look up and Peter would jump up from his seat with his prepared statement. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, does anybody see what I'm seeing? The president is simply taking scripted questions and he's giving scripted answers. There's nothing here of real exchange of ideas. Everything has been written by a speechwriter, both the question and the answer. When are the American people going to have an opportunity to hear the real issues discussed? Do you have that question, a feeling sometimes when you
what
watch television?
What you're talking about, it's a dance. It's a dance.
Right.
They all have their roles, and then you put your hand out here, and I put my hand out there, and I mentioned this in the book. I mean, these people really want to have in White House invitations.
So, and of course, if you ask the wrong questions, you don't get asked back again.
That's right. And the whole thing develops into something that I think is very dangerous for us.
Well, I think
as a free society.
Well, then, what is the solution? I mean, you've raised the question very, very well. We got a real problem. Now, what's the answer to the problem?
The only thing we can do is basically what you're doing, and that is to try to touch people who are individuals, who think for themselves, and try to get them to recognize that we don't have to go along with the tribe, and we don't have to go along with the power, we don't have to agree with the president, that we will only have the country that they envisioned 300 years ago if we think for ourselves.
And I certainly agree with that. We must get the people involved in this whole political process, but they've got to be able to understand what the process is about, and they're not going to get it by watching television, that's for certain.
And have you seen what the FCC is about now?
Well, I thought that is the most frightening. Why don't you tell our listeners, though, who may not be aware of the latest FCC absurdity?
We don't know what the outcome of it is. They've been working on it today, and that is to get more big corporations to own more broadcasting entities. So that the nightmare that I have is that Rupert Murdoch will be telling us all what to think.
Well, when he was, of course, in his undergraduate days, he was known as Rupert the Red. He had a bust of Lenin, which he had on.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. And in fact, I even found that recently when I went to one of the websites looking it up. And I remembered this after reading it in either Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report. And I had saved the article, and now I can't find it. But I did find that up on the website mentioning that he had the bust of Lenin. And he still has the bust of Lenin. But people think communism has something to do with redistributing the wealth. No, communism, stripped of all the idealism, is really a system of an elite controlling the masses.
I don't think that.
You don't?
No. I think, remember they called one another comrade?
Right.
It was based on the idea of fraternalism.
Oh, of course
it was.
Of
everybody helping everybody else.
Well, of course, that was the theory, but how was
it
practiced?
It got all mixed up. Got badly mixed up.
Well, of course, but you, if they were to tell people that they were giving the whole of their lives to create an elite system where the society never withered away and where you had a ruling elite maintained in power by a police force and a military, and everybody who did not belong to the party or didn't go along with them was subject to arrest or imprisonment, if they told people that was what they wanted, why, of course, they wouldn't have gone for it. But this is why, of course, a man like Rupert Murdoch would be so enthralled with Lenin, or why the leaders of the organization like the Council on Foreign Relations, probably their most treasured possession, you'll find it if you go to the Harold Pratt House back at 68th Street in New York City, and there they have under glass their treasured possession. It's a copy of their magazine read by Vladimir Lenin. Who, of course, I don't know how many million people he had killed, but they treasure that. That is, of course, it's there under glass so anybody can see it. And he had read their magazine. It even made notations in the margin. They think that's really wonderful. They see nothing wrong with what Lenin represented, and not, of course, redistributing the wealth of of everyone, but redistributing the wealth of the middle class and, of course, having a ruling elite. And then really, it's almost a Platonic type of society, similar to what what Plato had described in the Republic. Well, where do we go from here? How are we going to, of course, get people concerned about what's going on? How are we going to make them even care enough to take a stand, to try to find out the information so that they can at least oppose what's happening with not only public television, but the media as a whole? Mr. Smith?
My belief is that there is a fundamental problem, and that is the erosion of what used to be called the liberal education. That people now are educated to be technicians. They go to college and they learn how to do a job. Nobody learns about what the problems have been in human society and how human society has dealt with them. And unless we have an educated populace that knows about what has happened before and the mistakes that human society has made before, we're going to go off as if nothing had ever happened and make our mistakes for the first time. It was Socrates who said, the ordinary man learns from his own experience. The wise man learns from the experience of others.
And of course, that is really so true.
We have all of history before us to teach us about the terrible things we're doing today. But nobody wants to learn, and nobody wants to teach it.
Well, of course,
it's uncomfortable, and you can't make a living that way.
But of course, at one time, we did have classical schools where we had classical education. Yeah, I mean, we had in the 1800s, while we had a 95-98% literacy rate, at least among the whites. Today, our children know far more about sex than they do about Shakespeare, far more about global warming than they do about geography or geometry, and certainly they have very little understanding of either Socrates or Plato or Aristotle or any of the great minds of the past.
And this is terrible for me. I feel as if I have fallen into a jungle.
Well, I you're not alone in the jungle. We're right there with you. Let's go to Nathan, who's calling from Contra Costi and one of our regular callers. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Oh, hi. Good evening. Well, first of all, just one quick comment and then the main point. Quick comment is you have your corporate socialism that came out of the English oligarchy, and then you have your Marxism that came out of the World Revolutionary Movement, and both of them favor world government, but they're not necessarily always on the same page.
Either. All right.
But anyways, it's neither here nor there. The main point is, yeah, absolutely. I think that your guest made a very perfectly reasonable comment when the gentleman said that we at one time had the residual overflow of Victorian America and Victorian England. And that's why a lot of these ideas like public television or the Great Society or whatnot could work reasonably in the sense that we had a sense that people were responsible. But now at this time, you know, if you don't have an internal sense of discipline in the people, and whether you're in favor of those ideas of the Great Society or not, that's another question. The point is they could work a whole lot better than society works today simply because you had a sense of internal self-discipline. You didn't have the swearing on television or movies. I just saw a PG-13 movie. I thought it was going to be pretty good. There were four-letter words in it. So you have to be careful, and the problem isn't PBS. The problem is not any political agenda. The problem is the people need to get back to fundamentals, the principles of monotheism, the basic God's laws.
All right. You won't get any arguments from me. How do you feel about what Nathan is saying, Roger?
I think Nathan's absolutely right, and I wonder if the only way for us to confront the needs that he has presented is to have a disaster, because those are the things that bring you out of a disaster.
I really think that you're absolutely right, and I hate to say this, but I think we are in the on the edge of a precipice. I think that disaster is looming in front of us, whether it's going to be economic, whether it's going to be a nuclear or terrorist threat. I don't know, but I believe that we are in serious, serious trouble, and I think that there is a senseless euphoria that grips America today. Everybody says, boy, it was a great war, we won the war, and let's get back to life as it was before, the market's moving up, and I think that there's very little to be optimistic about, other than and perhaps the best thing that could possibly happen is exactly what you say. A major catastrophe may get people to reevaluate what's important. Nathan, do you have anything else?
No, hold on. I hear the break. So,
okay, bye-bye. Okay, fine. Thanks very much. And, of course, when we get back, why, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Roger Smith. His book, The Other Face of Public Television, Censoring the American Dream. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Roger P. Smith, and of course, he's a writer. He's written television scripts. Are you still active in the industry?
I am an old person, so I work with an organization called Senior TV, a volunteer organization of seniors who are interested in developing original television programs that express their own vision.
Well, how do you get them actually broadcast?
There is a channel on Warner Cable, where I am in Palm Springs, that has a channel for this sort of thing.
All right, I think that's really well worthwhile, and certainly there are some excellent things on the cable channels, and I think it's a wonderful thing that at least there is some place that people can get their ideas put forward out of the away from the mainstream of ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, and all the others, where you may think one may be better than the other, but they're all pretty much going the same direction. Once in a while, you'll see things on cable television that really are unique and different that you would never see on any of the mainline channels. So I think that's wonderful. What sort of response are you getting from your audience?
You mean from my readers?
No, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that you you were putting on television.
They watch it. They watch it.
Do they appreciate it? Do they understand that?
All we know is that cable continues to broadcast it.
All right, fine. And then, of course, what response are you getting to your book, then?
My book? Less than I would expect. I spent a lot of time at four borders, and I found that I sat in borders like an item in a supermarket. And I don't think I'm a supermarket item.
Well, I'll tell you what, having written several books myself, I find it very, very difficult to get a book out, you know, unless you, of course, have a major publisher behind you, you know, and certainly you have to get onto radio, you have to get onto television, you have to work to do that. And my first book was on the AIDS epidemic. My last one was on geopolitics. And, you know, but I do an awful lot of time on radio. Talk radio to me is by far the most efficient means of creating a market for a product, you know, and if you can just get onto radio stations and, of course, get your ideas out there and intrigue people, and then hopefully they'll call and order the book.
Now, good for you. My problem is that I'm a maker. I make things. I make books, I make television programs, and marketing is something I've never understood. I was very lucky during my professional life that someone would come to me and they'd say, okay, here's a bunch of money. Let's do a show. Because I'm not a fundraiser and I'm not a marketer, I'm just a maker. So I made this book, and I hope that in 100 years, people will still continue to read it.
Well, of course, I was an orthopedic surgeon for many years, and I knew nothing at all about marketing or business of this sort anyway. And, of course, in 1994, I retired, went into talk radio, and, boy, I sure made an awful lot of mistakes. But hopefully we're learning a little bit not only about the radio business but about the marketing. And, of course, mm-hmm. we do market through our ministry, because this is how we're able to stay on the air. Now, how can people get copies of your book?
They can send an email to me.
All right, and what's the email address?
The email is rogersmith2@earthlink.net.
Roger Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And what's after that?
Two. The number two.
Right. At?
Earthlink.net.
At earthlink.net.
Earthlink.net. And there's a hardcover or a softcover.
All right, fine.
And there is a website,
all right,
on which they can get more details, which is called otherface.net.
Other what now?
Other face.
Other face? Face.
Face. Other face.
Other face. Dot,
mm-hmm. dot net.
Net. Okay, mm-hmm. fine. Otherface.net or rogersmith2@earthlink.net. Now, if you're out the question in the audience and you have any question or comment on Mr. Smith's premise, which is the fact that public television has really failed in its effort to provide an outlet for the uplifting things, the things that would really perhaps improve the outlook of our people, that we've gotten away from the really important things, and that is the classic education, because there's nothing new under the sun. All we have to do is see what happened 100 years ago or 200 years ago or 1,000 years ago or at the time of ancient Greece, at the time of ancient Rome. And it's like deja vu all over again, exactly the same political ideas, the basic concepts, they've all been tried before. And there were people in ancient Rome, like Cicero, who was trying to point out what was going on, and he was ridiculed and laughed at, just as Mr. Smith and myself may very well be today by many of the smug people who said, Rome could never fall. We are the greatest nation in the world. Why, we have an empire. We have an army that can't be stopped. And of course, look at these people just trying to tell us that there are problems in society. But I'm sure there were people in ancient Greece. Plato was trying to warn the people where they were headed, and nobody wanted to hear. But we have all this past history, and what a shame it is that we do not teach this in our schools. We do not teach the lessons of the past, so that we do not have to, of course, repeat the tragedies of those eras. Certainly our founding fathers were well-schooled in the classics. They understood what had happened in ancient Greece. They understood what had happened in ancient Rome. That's why they created our nation as it is today, or at least as it was 100 years ago. Unfortunately, we seem to have lost our way somewhere along the way. Do you have that feeling?
I think that there was a philosopher whose name I can't... George Santayana.
Yes.
Who said, if you do not know your history, you will be condemned to relive it.
Right.
And it's terrible to think that we live in a culture that has a tendency to think only in terms of the history of the last week or the last day, and to know that they are going to be reliving the history of the other empires that failed.
And nobody really seems to see anything wrong with America moving towards an empire. But of course,
except
that
me.
Well, and me and a few other people who really understand what is behind so much of what's going on today. But of course, there are those who really do have dreams of empire. And of course, they talk about creating a new international order under our control. Well, they may be crazy, but they're the ones who control the reins of power, and they control the medium, and they control the reality of the American people. And all we can do is just try to point out with a voice we have, maybe a small voice, but hopefully it's growing and increasing, and we've gone from where we started with one station back in 94 to the point where at least we have about 55 different outlets every week. Many of them are only half an hour a week. But we have people who faithfully design their week so that they can hear that Saturday program. And when somebody tells me that, I feel it's all very worthwhile. Other times, I sit in my empty studio simply talking to somebody over the telephone who I've never met, although I do have your picture here, which is in the bookmark in the book. So at least I know what you look like, and I can see that you love books because the photograph shows Mr. Smith in a blue suit and a tie. And, of course, behind him are bookshelves full of books, which, of course, is the way our home is. Our home is simply one gigantic library with somewhere probably close to 20,000 books in it.
I have something I would say about that, and that is that I have a niece who's getting ready to go to college. She's trying to figure out what college or university she's going to go to, and I gave her one piece of advice. Go to the one that has the biggest library, because that's where the learning is. That's where you'll get your education. Read.
I really think that's really so true. And it doesn't necessarily matter so much what your professors teach you. I mean, you're going to have to...
Not as much.
Right.
No.
You're going to have to pass your classes. You're going to have to, give them the answers they want to hear. But you have to understand, and you only learn by reading. And don't read the modern drivel. Most of it isn't worthwhile. But read the ancient books by the old philosophers and, of course, the people who were here at the founding of America. And they fully understood the fact that men basically could not be trusted with power. And I love Thomas Jefferson. And we have right here next to where I sit every evening the Master Thoughts of Thomas Jefferson, published in 1907 by the Bar of the City of New York. or the state of New York, and there, of course, his statement, in matters of politics, I speak not to be of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And he was certainly a great writer and a great mind, and we are deeply indebted to him for his insight into the nature of mankind and how men always, of course, seem to follow the same path when given the opportunity, and especially rulers, they always want to increase their power over the lives of the people in that constant battle of the individual for freedom against, of course, the state that always wants to control ever more.
And it's not only the state, but we have consumerism folding into the state, in which consumerism is telling everybody that nothing existed before today. There's nothing in the world except them and their needs and their desires. And the important thing about all of human life is that they should fulfill whatever desire they have today.
And of course, you know, at one time, while we put off our desires to sometime in the future, so that we could, of course, accomplish something here, and of course, to get the education, get the knowledge, and sometime in the future, we may be able to enjoy the fruits of it, but people don't want to wait to pick the fruit until later because they want it right now. And I think you make that point very well in the book. Well, now, so what are some of the other major issues that you'd like to bring forward to our listening audience? Some of the other major themes of the book?
Well, I sort of think that what happens is that there is nothing any different from humankind from the way they've ever been before. And that is that many people have go to an institution saying, this is an institution that is going to be a place of benefit where that I'm going to join, where we're going to do some good. And they join the institution as my colleagues did in public television, and thinking we would be able to do something decent for humankind. And then you learn that within all of that, there are always some bad apples. What we used to call, or someone I knew used to call, the street kids. Those who will come to an institution of public benefit and figure out how they can connive and through duplicitousness have some kind of gain for themselves. And I think we have an example with people who go into the government, which was meant, when I grew up, the government, going into the government was the thing you did as a service to your fellow man. And now we find people who go into the government to get a lot of contacts to be able to make money.
Well, I think we see a perfect example of that in Lyndon Johnson, who had to borrow money when he was elected to Congress to get back to Washington, D.C., and when he retired as president, he was one of the richest men in Texas. So he certainly knew how to utilize government to enrich himself, and I think, tragically, I think we have an awful lot of people who do that. Now, some of the people are fabulously wealthy to begin with, but that doesn't mean just because they're fabulously wealthy that they really don't want more.
I'm scared. Can I say this without being censored? I'm scared that we have a public servant who worked in the Nixon administration who, out of his public service, somehow or other got himself into a position whereby he could have an income of $2 million a year, and he's our vice president.
You mean the ex-CEO of Halliburton?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's still getting $160,000 a year. They call it defrayed salary. Now, I don't know how he could get a defrayed salary for his prior employer and not somehow be subservient to them, as I mentioned on the last hour. Why, of course, is it just coincidence that Halliburton was awarded a $600 million contract recently to rebuild Iraq after the war? Only they didn't know what they were going to have to do. They just got the $600 million.
Coincidence.
What a coincidence.
Nothing to do with having any friends in Washington.
And you wonder, where is the outcry from the American people? A few people have said, you know, it looks like, I mean, some people, some suspicious people, really might think that there is a connection between Mr. Cheney's getting $160,000 a year from Halliburton, having been their former CEO. In fact, I thought it was just so amazing that he would be able to his whole life in government. He was there under the Nixon administration. He was there under the Reagan administration. He left there in 1992 and immediately becomes the chief executive officer of Halliburton, this international corporation. Now, you ordinarily have to work your way up to the ranks. You don't go in as CEO unless, of course, it's just as a temporary measure until you go back to government again.
Now, that's not manipulative. That's not exploitative. That's just a nice guy who had a lot of nice friends.
All right, fine. And I think that this is what's the tragedy of what's happening. And I think that whether you're on the left or whether you're on the right, whether you're Republican or you're a Democrat, if you've got an ounce of intelligence, you're going to say, it looks to me like our current administration is just as corrupt as our last administration. And maybe this is happening because the good people are not involved in the political process.
I think if you have any writers in your audience, it's a good time for them to write what Gibbon wrote. Gibbon wrote The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. And I think we're about ready for our Gibbon.
Well, I think that, you know, if you look at the things that he saw, I mean, the breakdown in the family and in religion and morality, and of course, the excesses of government, everything that brought down the Roman Empire is in place bringing down our empire. But I think the most important thing is, of course, we've lost the vision. We've lost the religious foundation, the moral foundation, and however you want to define that, I'm coming from a Christian point of view, but our previous caller is coming from a Judaic point of view, the young man who called in earlier. But, of course, we all look to these external restrictions on man's activity and, of course, the fact that we owe an allegiance to something greater than ourselves. And, of course, we should not be self-centered, but centering on that God from whom all blessings come. And we've lost that. God has become something really relatively unimportant. I mean, we have our politicians who say, God bless America. But, of course, is there any reason why God should bless America today? Well,
that's a good question. And what's bothering me is that when I was brought up, we were taught that the good life is giving. The good life is not taking. The good life is giving. And I don't know what's happening, because are children being brought up that way today? Are they being brought up to realize that it is better to give than to receive? When I was a server in the Episcopal Church, our minister said to me, "We believe that the good life is the life of service." Who believes that the good life is the life of service anymore? I hope somebody does. Because we have only come where we've come because of people who have given and who believe in service, not because of people who are on the take.
Well, of course, it requires a certain amount of idealism. It has to be this idea that we would be a better society if people were involved and were concerned about their fellow men. But, of course, there is such an exploitive attitude today, and, of course, if you can, of course, exploit your fellow man, that seems to be the major objective rather than to serve him.
But that's a revolutionary concept, and it's radical. And revolutionary, and I think it will ultimately work to the detriment of the society.
Well, it leads to the destruction of the society. There's no question in my mind that is exactly where we are headed. And, of course, as you pointed out, and we pointed out earlier, I think we're on the edge of a precipice. I think that we are facing a major and catastrophic changes. And unless the American people are willing to take a stand, I see no alternative to the total collapse of our economic system, the destruction of our so-called safety net, the loss of the pension funds, the loss of the monetary savings, the bonds, the stocks, and perhaps even the loss of all freedom. But of course, it may take something like that to get people to understand really what's happened to America and to get them to reevaluate what is really important in this world. And I think that without a vision, my people perish. That's what it says in the Good Book, and I believe that's absolutely true. If we lose our vision, why, of course, there's no hope for the survival of this great nation.
And here we are living in the best world that there's ever been, with the greatest prosperity that there's ever been, with the most opportunities to build a real paradise on earth. And what are we doing with it?
Well, we're certainly not doing a very good job, and of course, I don't believe that we will ever have a better society as long as people can look to the government for financial help. I mean, certainly I believe we each have an obligation to help our fellow men, but not through the medium of government. There is a place for charity, for charity. I believe charity is an important thing, but of course there's a lot of difference between charity and welfare. And we've seen what welfare did to the black family in America. The black family in America was strong and faithful, and there was a husband and a wife and children, and of course the fear of God in those families. And today, 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. And I think that's a direct result, not only of course the moral breakdown in our society, but the welfare state that punished families for having a man in the house. And of course, we've done terrible things to the black community. In the white community, 25% of the children are born out of wedlock. At one time, we used to call living together without being married, living in sin, and now we just call it the most normal thing in the world. And we've changed the entire moral structure of our once great society, which was built upon moral concepts of right and wrong. And now everything seems to be increasingly relative. Have you run into that?
Absolutely, and I think the solution is kids. I think that young people are much more sensitive to the inequities and the problems around them than older people are, because older people have a vested interest in whatever it is they're doing. And the young people are the ones who can write the... This is one reason why I got into public television. The young people are the ones who can write the plays, who can write the books, who can write the poems, who can do the kind of the instruction of what the world needs to be. When I was growing up, when President Nixon was doing some things that were not so good for this country, the people who were upset about it were the kids. And I think that young people have a clearer understanding of the problems around them than the older people have.
Well, I think that when you get older, why you sort of want to, you don't want to rock the boat. You sort of want to go along with the establishment because we all profit from the way this system is. We may have a corrupt monetary system, but gee, we're all benefiting from it. We may have a terrible foreign policy that is exploiting people in other countries, but don't we all benefit from that? I mean, certainly we're concerned about the oppression of the people in China, but look at all those cheap goods we can buy in Kmart and in Walmart. And so, of course, we're concerned about the things in Africa, but if they can provide textiles for us at a much cheaper price and we can produce them here, so what's wrong with that? And I think we've lost the vision of what life is all about. And there are rights and wrongs, and there are things that are more important than cheap toys and trinkets.
Who was it who said, America is about money? Always been about money, and it will always be about money. Gore Vidal.
Well, of course, Gore Vidal and some of the things he writes today, I would tend to agree with on the war and what's going on today. But of course, there's nothing wrong with a free enterprise system. But I don't think that originally America was all about money. That is, of course, the Marxist approach to what's going on.
Right. And I think we've adopted the Marxist approach. That's the terrible thing.
Right. Well, I would just say that increasingly this is, but it wasn't always that way.
This is scary to me.
Right. But
I went to Yale University. The president of Yale University, oh, in the past there had been historians and poets and things like that. The president of Yale University now is an economist.
Well,
not a philosopher, not a historian, not somebody who looks to the past for wisdom, but somebody who knows how to make money.
Well, of course, that's all right as long as we have a Keynesian system that it works very well. But what happens, of course, when we get to the end of the road, as you remember what John Maynard Keynes said, when somebody pointed out the fallacies of his concept, and his response was, well, in the end, we all die, or we're all dead. And I really think you have to understand that you can run a phony fiat money system just as long as you can convince people that they want to take the money and they can buy something with it. But what happens when the value of the dollar begins to erode and be destroyed? George Soros, who's certainly one of the smartest international financiers, is currently shorting the dollar. And, of course, we saw what happened when he shorted the currency of Malaysia. Well, people said it could never happen here. The dollar has lost over 30% of its value in relationship to the euro in the last 2 years. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't think you've seen much of anything yet. And
really?
The people who want to put their value and really put their faith, you know, in their pension funds and in their bonds and in their annuities and in their savings account, I think they're going to be in for a real shock in the very, very near future. And our plea is understand what this is about. And understand there really are more important things than the material things that you possess. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners this evening?
I have a parting thought.
All right, fine.
encourage creative people. It will be hard for anybody to be a creative person in America. But if you have one, if you know one, that's what the society learns from and thrives from and which will make it decent in history.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how history judges what's going on in America today. Our guest this evening has been Roger Smith. His book, The Other Face of Public Television, fascinating read. Much more than simply talking about television, it's talking about philosophy, talking about what's happening to America. Mr. Smith, thank you so very much for being our guest this evening.
My pleasure, Dr. Smith.
Good night. God bless you.
Good night.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program this evening. Of course, this is the time when we need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent on those of you out there who believe in what we're doing. We really, of course, our next goal is to try to get this hour onto the shortwave so we can expand our reach out across America. And if you believe in what we're doing and would like to join in this effort, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Of course, the first hour is heard in Washington. We'd like to get the second hour. In fact, we'd like to get both hours onto a shortwave, and we've had just some very interesting offers on that, but we can't do it without your help. And so if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe that the only hope is education of people and, of course, faith in the Lord, why, give us a call or write to us at Radio Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. Then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, I don't believe God ever again will bless this nation. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow night at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.